episode 49 of the Improvised Music Agenda podcast with Andrew Lyle. Let's have a listen. Thanks so much for joining again. And yeah, we're back for a moment with our guest this time around, Andrew Lyle, who's an incredible drummer, as you've heard there. Yeah, episode 49. Wow, yeah. I can't believe I've done that many. Anyway, yes, fun episode today. I mean, it's been in the can for a while, since about May 2022. But before I talk more about the episode, I should mention that we've got a Patreon page. So, yeah, if you're enjoying the podcast and want to give in some money to help expenses of running it and everything, hosting costs and all that, please feel free to kind of join the Patreon and donate, or yeah, I think you could do one-off donations as well if you're into that kind of thing. If not, just help spread the word. More listeners the better, and yeah, it's good to get the word out about this our corner of this music. So I'm trying to think of other housekeeping things. If you listened to the last episode, I mentioned London Jazz Festival, so that's happened by now. Thanks to everyone who came down to see Di Cascotion the other week. And yeah, also thanks to everyone who's been listening to the Constantly Moving Happiness Machines singles, the band I've got with my friend Jonathan Lindhorst. So I think we're kind of half planning of doing an episode where we both talk about the record, which probably we've not recorded yet, but hopefully now that I'm saying out loud, it has to happen. So yeah, this is me trying to be productive and not procrastinate. Anyway, so this episode with Andrew Lyle. So yeah, we recorded this back in May 2022. I think I mentioned the date, but it was the night after seeing a gig that Andrew did at Cafe Otto with John Edwards and Kit Downs. Incredible piano trio. And yeah, you hear a little bit of the music in the intro, outro from that group. We had a good chat. Just talking about music and nerding out about stuff. And yeah, it's like your kind of classic 442 of Improvised Music Agenda podcast. But anyway, I hope you're all keeping well, and I'll catch you guys at the end. Thanks. Talk about drums.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I know drums.
Yeah. Good. Well, that's lucky, isn't it?
Well, I guess I do.
Yeah. Because I was thinking, with kind of the practice of drums and your like approach to it. Because I know like how much you kind of work on that and the whole technical side of it. Because I guess, yeah, it's probably one of those things. Probably people wouldn't necessarily think of, like, people who work, you know, like, I guess, like, mostly improvising drummers kind of thing. Is that being, like, a super technical thing? But I guess...
Yeah.
How that has become part of your language.
Well, that's how I started. Like, I didn't start as, like, a purely improvising drummer.
Oh, yeah.
I came from a more classical drum... kind of drum centric, you know, thing of like loads of technique, and you know, that was sort of my first teacher, my first good teacher got me on this road to sort of, you know, loving technique basically, or getting into it. And then I got into improvising later, but the thing that I'm into now, like that, this specific, you know, complex rudimental thing, I got obsessed with that about 8 years ago or something. Just got really into it, like super into it.
Great. Yeah. So that complexity, because was that, is that like the Basel kind of thing?
I kind of got into that's what sort of reignited the kind of the practice of it, of the, you know, very complicated things. And then from there I got into more, I guess, the more like American style hybrid things and hybrid rudiments and, you know, weird, you know, time-based practices with rudiments and things.
So. Oh, right, okay, yeah, yeah. So when you say, like, with a time-based kind of thing, so, like...
Like, layering, sort of, taking rudiments and then putting them through grids, different time grids, so, like, a pattern or a rudiment or whatever you want to call it that's maybe in like a three note pattern or three note rudiment, but then putting it through, you know, grids that are four grids or five grids or seven grids and stuff, so you get these interlocking things that happen, but that was quite a big change, a big game changer really.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah, because I suppose, yeah, so is that coming from, like, I suppose, like, taking that multi-directional time kind of thing?
That's how, like, I've sort of use it.
Okay, yeah.
That's how it kind of informs a lot of my language, is that freeing it up in that way to be, you know, to have that sort of multi-directional thing. but, yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it, really. Yeah. But it's coming from a very nerdy, like, American drumline, like, thing, you know, that they do all those exercises and stuff, and how complicated can they make it, and all this kind of thing, you know.
Oh, wow, yeah, cool, yeah. But no, it's amazing, yeah, just the idea of tracing it back like that, so...
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, so did you spend time, like, playing a bunch of that kind of music?
Yeah.
Like, oh, cool.
Yeah. It's kind of like puzzles, you know. They're just fun to work out. The harder the better, really. Just for that satisfaction in looking at a page and thinking, wow, this is impossible, how am I going to do this? And then, you know, working it for a couple of weeks and you sort of unlock all the little bits and put it all together. So, yeah.
Great.
It's like Sudoku.
Yeah, yeah, no, I can imagine, yeah. Kind of sounds like it, yeah. But, yeah, but yeah, so thinking now, you were talking about your, like, first drum teacher.
Mm.
So that was, what do you say, like, classic drums, like, you don't mean, like, orchestral?
No, just, like, like, the sort of, like, Vinnie Colaiuta and the you know, Steve Gadd, and, like, that kind of drummer's drummer.
Yeah,
sort of thing. Yeah, he was really into that side of thing, like the clinician, you know, big touring drummers that go off on their own and play drums to a room full of drummers kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of what I mean by that, you know.
Right, sort of,
getting good at the drums to be good at the drums.
Mm.
Instead of, you know, which is, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, no, definitely. But, yeah, but it's funny, yeah, I definitely have those, like, YouTube kind of moments,
yeah.
Like 2 a.m, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Watch some kind of nerdy bass guitar VHS, or,
yeah,
you know, old VHS John Patitucci, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
They're great, yeah.
I still go back to some old Virgil Donati things. He was...
Oh, yeah, is he the guy... Did he play with Dream Theatre, or he auditioned with them?
Yeah, there's that video.
Oh, man, yeah, that's funny. So, but do you still kind of... yeah, like, with that kind of thing, but do you still take a lot of that stuff on, like...
Not so much.
Or is it like where it kind of started?
Yeah, that's more of where it started. That kind of, I guess getting into complexity, you know, because there's a lot of that in that world, you know, of the drummer's drummer sort of thing, I guess.
Cool. So I'm guessing that was before college.
Yeah.
You were checking that stuff for them.
Yeah. So it was when I was like 18 or something.
Oh, great. Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, and then, so I was just thinking, so, like, when you were, when you got to Leeds,
mm-hmm.
So that was on the jazz course.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, oh, cool. So like, with that kind of thing, so were you kind of getting into jazz beforehand?
Yeah, a little bit, in a very mild way. I got to college never really having played it.
Okay.
But, you know, it was the better course, you know, it seemed like the better course, you know, to take.
Yeah.
So I just kind of jumped in and...
Oh, great. So
what happened.
So were you listening a bunch of stuff before the course?
Not a lot, really. Like, I got some Monk and, like, classics and, you know, Love Supreme and, you know, Kind of Blue, that kind of thing, you know, when you don't know quite what to listen to, so you listen to the things that people say you should listen to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got really into it though oh, from those classics.
Oh, great! Yeah.
Before
yeah.
I went, but at the same time, when I got there, I didn't know, you know, I didn't know standards, and I didn't know like all this kind of jazz college thing. So it was quite a steep learning curve.
Right. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And then, do you remember like what really caught your ear? Like, do you remember hearing something? What the turning point was for you then?
For getting into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it was Elvin on Love Supreme, and it was I always liked kind of, I guess I've always liked dissonance, and I've always liked like a lot of the music that I've listened to through my, you know, teens and stuff was a little bit more out, you know, really into Zappa and Beefheart and, you know, At the Drive-In and, you know, Mars Volta and things that are a bit odd and a bit, you know, rhythmically dense and stuff. So, yeah, hearing Elvin and also hearing I remember the first time I heard, there was like one of the first jazz albums I got was a Monk compilation. And that almost like hurt my ears the first time I heard it with the kind of that sort of, which was very, it sounded very dissonant. The first time I heard it.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I remember that, distinctly remember, wow, this is really hard to listen to. But I kind of just persevered. And
oh, great. Do you remember what track it was?
No, I can't remember. No. Maybe Ruby My Dear?
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, he's just hammering. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Oh, brilliant. But yeah, oh, cool. But yeah, like, but now that you mentioned Elvin, though, I could totally hear kind of...
Yeah. that was probably the... Yeah, it was probably the first like jazz drummer I really, really got into, for sure. And that was a good few years in college when that was my main listening point.
Yeah, totally. But it's amazing how he kind of has so many things going on as well.
Mm.
You know, like... Yeah, I was listening to, you know, it's that McCoy Tyner record that he's on. Real McCoy.
Oh, right.
Yeah, there's that tune that's in 3 on it, and then it's like, but it's weird, like with Elvin, how he plays is not in 3, really. It's kind of just feels like his own thing. There's no big downbeats and that.
Yeah, so flowing and.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, you know, that feels like the basis for so many things after it, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Whether it's someone going down the jazz route or the kind of more improviser type route and everything in between, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
It feels, yeah. But, yeah, oh, cool. But, and then, so in Leeds, so was that when, you were there for the beginning of Shatner's Bassoon, was it? Or was that a bit
later? So we started Shatner's Bassoon when I was in third year, I think. Or maybe it was the year before, but it was, I'd been there for a little while. But I'd been playing with a couple of the guys from the band, like, throughout college. I think I did my first sort of free thing was my first year there. That was almost my introduction to it. I don't know if that was with any of the Shatner's guys, but definitely over the next few years, I was playing with like Ollie Dover quite a lot. Me and him would always, we'd play a lot, you know, as duo and stuff. And with Johnny Richards, I think I was in a few bands with him. And yeah, and then got to know Craig Scott a little bit later. And then the band just sort of came together like that. But that was quite, it was an interesting band to work on, because the whole idea of it was, in the beginning, was Johnny or Mick would bring just insane, what felt like at the time just insanely difficult music, and we just rehearse for hours and hours and hours and hours and just get it all together, which I feel like I haven't really done much since. Like, that's
all right. Well, like dealing with
additional things with sort of intense rehearsal, because it was literally, you know, 4 or 5 hours in a basement somewhere, or you know, for many, many days. So
amazing, yeah. That sounds like those trout mask replica kind of vibes.
Yeah, no, maybe not quite. Not quite as intense as that, but
yeah,
you know, just dealing with, you know, that sort of complexity and working out how to play it.
Yeah.
Which yeah. It was a good learning experience for sure.
Totally, yeah, no, because I remember who was it? Yeah, Callum, our friend.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him telling me a story about, like, you guys rehearsing in the house here.
Oh yeah.
Ages ago, just talking about how, like, yeah, one bar for like 2 hours kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which I was like, that. Whoa, that's
it might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but
yeah.
But yeah, there was some tricky stuff, especially because with the two drummers, we'd often, this is going back, I can't really remember exactly, but we'd often split the music in two, so one side of the band, one trio would be playing the written material, and then the other, like Hocketing, so one would be playing one idea, and then the other side would be playing in all the gaps.
Right, yeah.
So almost like there'd be two, it would be like a continuous flow of notes, but it would be split between the two sides kind of thing. And it was just, yeah, it was tricky.
Yeah, oh man, but yeah, but I'm good to never got to see you guys live, because the record is like, whoa.
Yeah. So you can still see them.
All right, are they still going, are they?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh wow, yeah. But the Hocketing thing, that sounds,
yeah,
that sounds like a vibe. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But cool. So yeah, but then, so in terms of like being around Leeds, so I'm trying to think. So who else would have been in your year?
So there was.
So like Johnny Chung and stuff.
No, he was the year above. Riley, Stone Lonergan.
Oh okay, yeah.
Kim McCary. Tom Revere, you know.
Oh right, because I think, yeah, because I remember auditioning for Leeds, so I think, yeah.
Oh, you auditioned?
Yeah, was it like 2008?
Yeah,
you started. Oh man, so I would have been the same year as you if I kind of went there. Yeah, wow, mad. Anyway, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Well, that would be cool.
Yeah, and then yeah, but like in terms of that kind of thing, so you like. All the playing in Leeds and stuff, like, so like the other groups that was going on, so was it just hunkering down doing the whole jazz thing as well?
Kinda, yeah. Yeah, what else? I mean, by the end of my time there, it was mostly the Shatner's Bassoon thing and different groups within that. So I had like a trio with Ollie Dover and Craig Scott that I was doing quite a bit, and then I guess it was like more of a little sort of collective.
Oh, right, okay.
Split up into different groups and stuff. But yeah, I was pretty. I didn't do that many other projects really.
Right, okay, yeah.
I was just quite focused on this weird thing that I was doing.
Yeah.
Didn't really either didn't really appeal to other other people or
right, yeah.
Or some, yeah.
Oh man, yeah. But yeah. Oh cool. So then after that, so you were in Portugal for a while?
Yep. Yeah.
Cool, yeah. So we're getting to play a bunch there.
Yeah. I mean, not as like as an outsider, it always takes a while, you know.
Mm.
But yeah, so I went there and then I managed to meet a bunch of people, really great musicians, through going to this place called Tremazul, which was like a record shop, and it was like the headquarters for Clean Feed Records.
Oh, wow.
Which I didn't know at the time. I just went in there and was like, you know, oh, this is a cool space. And got talking to the guy who worked there, who turned out to be a really great bass player called Hernani Fustino. And yeah, I just got chatting to him and was like, you know, I just moved here. I'm looking, you know, do you know anywhere to play and stuff? You know, what's going on? What's the scene like? And he was like, oh, you know, there are gigs here and here and here. You come to my gig with his band. We're playing. I was like, oh, cool. Yeah, which was Red Trio, which was a really great, amazing trio. And then he was like, and if you know, if you want to play just to practice and stuff, just come here. We've got a back room with a drum kit you can use. You know, just come. So wow. I ended up going there almost every day.
Amazing.
And just shedding, really. But through that, I got to meet people I still play with now. Like this great tenor player called Rodrigo Amado, who I just recorded with quite recently. Yeah. He would just come by and we would jam from time to time. And yeah, just... It was a good time. Yeah. A lot of playing, a lot of drinking, a lot of...
Oh, man, that's all you want, isn't it? Playing and drinking. Oh, dude, I love those days.
hasn't changed that much.
No. So, yeah, so how long were there? Was it like a couple of years?
Yeah, it was two, but I was sort of... I didn't have much... I couldn't really find work there because it was a pretty tricky time in Portugal then, so there was a lot of unemployment, and so someone who didn't, I didn't speak Portuguese and I didn't have much to offer apart from, you know, playing the drums or maybe teaching the drums, and that wasn't really viable there. So I'd be there for maybe 3 or 4 months and then I'd come back to Leeds to do some gigs and stuff and rehearse with Shatners and for a couple months and then go back.
Right,
yeah. So I was kind of, yeah, back and forth really.
Oh wow, yeah. Oh man, but but I'm thinking like, so with moving to London.
Mm.
So yeah, well, when did you move down? It must have been like similar time to me, I suppose.
I guess
like,
so.
Would have been like 2013, 2014, something.
Yeah. Wait. So graduating. 2014. 13, 14, something like that. Yeah. But that was cool. I managed to get... I've always found, like, the improvised music scene is always in wherever you go. Like, literally wherever you go, the improvised music scene in that place is really accepting and open and, you know... You can start playing with people immediately, or very, very quickly at least. So yeah, I managed to start playing with people, you know, as soon as I got here, really, just with a few contacts and got into the scene. So
yeah, no, definitely, that's what I find great. And yeah, here at least, you know, it's kind of everyone's like super nice about everything.
Yeah,
you know, especially like yeah. Trying to think, you know, the Brock guys.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, that feels like this kind of centre.
Yeah,
in a way,
there's like a little scene built up around that Broccoli crew, you know.
Mm. Yeah, but no, it's brilliant, isn't it? But so was that roughly when you and Colin Webster started playing?
Yeah. So. I think I was, I met Colin on a gig. So I was doing a trio gig with Ollie and Craig in Manchester, and Colin was playing on the same bill with Dead Neanderthals, which is like a crazy improvising. But that album was the concept was there were two baritone sax and drums, and they played one note each for like just screaming one note each for the whole time.
Oh wow!
And it was just this intense experience. But they were playing the same night, and I think that's where I met Colin. And we just got together after that, and I think we recorded quite soon after that, after we'd just been playing.
All right, great. Like stuff. What, so was that first recording duo?
Yeah. So we've got how many duo records now? Quite a lot. Maybe 3, 4. But the first one was we did a cassette, which we recorded straight to cassette, which was brilliant. Quite cool. Just like I still do, but there's a rehearsal studio in the basement of a community centre in Stoke Newington, which I used to be in quite a lot. We just went down there and threw up mics quite randomly and recorded, and it ended up sounding really good, you know. So
brilliant.
That was the first duo record we did.
Awesome. Yeah, no, because I was thinking, because there's like so many things that you're both on, but like how do you think that's like developed over the years, kind of?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably my main collaborator, really, and has been for the last 6 years or more. We have a shared language almost now. It's always been very easy, you know.
Yeah, because I was going to say, because like always sounds really fresh whenever I hear you guys.
That's cool.
New and yeah.
Yeah, that's nice to hear, yeah. My thing is also I like to be in the practice room, so I don't like to do the same thing for very long. I always like to be moving things forward. My approach is very in the drum room.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, that's what's doing it. But because like on the way here I was listening to a thing that you Colin and I should remember them too. Need to get up on my phone.
Stian Larson.
Yeah, I think it was like the most recent one that came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah which no it's cool. It's like but I was thinking, so how because like because there's like Codian Trio as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
So I guess like similar lineups, but is it kind of
and also we've done quite a few sax guitar drums trios.
The first one we did
with Alex Ward, that was the first, that might have been either the first or the second thing we recorded together, I can't quite remember. We did that one, and then Cody and Trio with Dirk Series, and then I went with Stian. It seems to be a bit of a theme, but it's good.
Super,
and also different, you know, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. I'm trying to figure out whether kind of it's almost like, you know, we get a bass and drums team, it's like sax and drums team.
Yeah.
It's like kind of rhythm section, but not rhythm section for hire, with all these different people. Yeah.
That's a good way to look at it, yeah.
That's great.
That trio with Stian, we had a few gigs recently. And that was really nice to play, because that's the first time we've done that in, you know, nearly 3 years or something. played together, but we've released two records in that time.
Oh wow!
You know, so it was good to actually get in the, you know, together and actually play. So after, you know, putting a lot of music out, you know, obviously with what's happened in the past.
Yeah, no, of course. You know. Yeah, yeah, definitely. But our courts, yeah, did you guys record another thing recently?
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I saw some pictures of that. Ah, cool. Yeah.
So there will be, another record out.
Good. But, we should talk about the new record with Kit Downs, John Edwards.
Yeah.
Then, yeah. But I should also mention the gig last night at Cafe Otto. So as we're recording this, today's May the 10th, the night after.
The release gig, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. It's incredible.
Oh, thanks, man.
tell me, like, so how did that trio come about?
I think it was 2019, I was talking to John about getting a piano trio together, because I'd never really done an improvising piano trio, and it's always been something that interested me, you know, that I was really keen to do. And we were just chatting about, you know, who we could ask, and, you know, he was really into the idea as well, because me and him had done little things before, you know, odd ad hoc gigs maybe, or like you know, just sort of one-offs, but yeah, we were into doing something. So and I suggested Kit, and John was really into that idea, so got in touch and we did a gig, and it was pretty just immediately really easy. you know sometimes you get together with musicians and it just works. It's just, you know, kind of effortless to make music that you're really happy with. So and after that we did the one gig, and then I think COVID happened, and then and then we decided to record, just because, you know, we really enjoyed the gig. So we managed to book Cafe Otto, and there was this window in sort of October, November 2020 when things started to open up again a little bit, but venues weren't really open to do gigs. But Otto opened up as like a recording space, rehearsal space. So yeah, just booked that, and we went and recorded, and it was really good.
Great.
So awesome. Yeah, and that's the record.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, because I remember seeing the listing with that first gig. Where you guys, but I couldn't go down, unfortunately. But yeah,
that might have been the very first gig.
Yeah, the very first one.
It's set.
Yeah, man, actually, I'm just trying to think. Is that's not a venue anymore, is it?
No, it's closed down. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's like such a cool vibe there.
But
man, I'm glad I finally got to see you guys. It's because every time something's been going on, it's like, oh shit, something else popped up.
And, yeah, it's the way.
Yeah, but I'm glad I got to see it at La Otto as well. That feels like,
I mean, it is my favourite place to play. It's just the atmosphere and the, you know, it's unmatched really for me. And I've just been there, so I've seen so many gigs there.
But I was gonna ask, like, with how the trio operates musically.
Mm.
So yeah, because I know, we were talking a little bit before being on mic, kind of thing.
Mm-mm.
But what I found really interesting were, it's just like kind of, there were moments like where it felt like kind of a bunch of duos happening, one wild card almost. Each time, which I was quite into that, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah. Like me and Kit were chatting about that actually last night. like often me and him will hook up, but you just know that John is gonna like throw like these sideways things in that are gonna keep it sort of really fresh. So it's the kind of trio that is like never gonna sit on a groove, but maybe there'll be one there. There'll be something happening, even if it's, you know, an abstract thing. But there'll be this like hookup between a couple of people, a couple of, you know, instruments. But the other one, you know, it's sort of this, messing things up a little bit. In the best way.
Definitely, and it's amazing seeing how no one was compromising their kind of approach as well.
Yeah.
It's like, because I suppose, thinking like someone like Kit, how he was playing like so harmonically, still, you know.
It's
not like kind of free jazz mode.
Like
slamming the piano is just actually kind of.
Yeah, like his language.
Yeah, you know? And like with John, just like seeing him still doing the kind of, you know, mad things. But yeah, but it's amazing also seeing him, like he was kind of playing a little, not softer, softer might be the wrong word to use when we're talking about. Yeah, but you know.
He plays, he's got that.
Yeah, no, no, totally. But yeah, but the fact, you know, he's like playing some notey things well as sounds and just like.
Yeah, he's the best, man.
So petrifying seeing him is like because you know, like it's funny, like, you know, sometimes, yeah, you know how he's kind of, he's got this thing of people have an assumption he's always at war with the bass, which kind of maybe is part of it, but then I was thinking like some of the shit he's doing, like so chopsy, like
yeah
that was the thing he's doing, like he's putting his hand down, but finding like all the harmonics with his thumb on the right hand.
Right.
And I was thinking, like, fuck, man, he must have spent like years in the practice room thinking that.
Yeah, yeah. Or just constantly gigging.
Yeah.
I think because he does.
You know,
but like constantly gigging, but always like creative music. You know. But constant.
Definitely. Yeah. Like. But yeah, it's incredible. It's just, but the fact that he's doing this kind of mad chopsy stuff.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, like totally virtuosic. But it's not as if he's kind of doing it for the flashiness.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's almost like a throwaway thing. It's like, oh, by the way, like this is the sound I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, what? Like, it catches you off guard. How he damn plays it is like, it's incredible. It's like. You know,
yeah, and that makes it. I mean, it just makes it very. So many options to interact with, you know. With that, the way he approaches it in that way, you know.
Definitely.
For me, it's just. it's just really. It's really just fun, and easy to, just create. Yeah.
Definitely. So like, what other playing situations have you had with John?
So we've got a quartet with so basically the Codian trio with John Edwards, but it's a slightly different different setup. Like it's Dirk's on acoustic guitar with like a tiny little bit of amplification, and I usually play like a much more minimal setup. I think we got an LP with that quartet out, and on that session I had snare drum and you know, percussion stuff, so it has a much different sound to the Codian trio thing, which is quite a full force kind of, you know, fire music kind of thing. So that group's really interesting because it forces me to play a lot differently, just from not having my usual my usual language together, because I'm very much a drum kit player. Like I spend all my time working on stuff with this setup, and then so doing gigs on just snare drum or snare drum and objects and percussion is a real good challenge.
So I can imagine, because that's like half the limbs gone, isn't it? Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's not having the feet. Sure. And
yeah. And but, not the, you know, long learned mechanical movements, you know, between, you know, the positioning and stuff, and you know, you learn these muscle memory things that get you around the instrument, and then to have those gone, that's almost part of the language as well, is shape and movement and this kind of thing, which helps develop flow and, you know, thinking in circles, straight lines, or squares and stuff to get around the instrument, and thinking of that as a almost as much as of a sound palette as as the actual sounds themselves.
So you mean physically moving your arms in those shapes, or how you feel?
Or how just the way, because the way a drum kit is, you know, you have to move around it. But so yeah, thinking about those movements in shape and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Then but it's interesting. Like talking about shapes and stuff. Because with that, maybe we should touch upon like actually talking about multi-directional time and how you feel it, kind of thing. I suppose it's not a thing that people really talk about too much.
No.
Because everyone just thinks like rubato and that's it, or noise.
Yeah.
Because obviously, I don't know. Like, I think most of the things I've heard you play, it's always like there's a groove there.
Yeah, that's what I'm really into. Yeah. This thing, I think that term multidirectional is such a good way of describing it.
Totally, like, yeah.
But I guess each player has a different approach.
No, totally, yeah.
But my approach is sort of, I like things going in that feel like they're going in a direction, but that have almost the ability to move anywhere at any time. So like manufacturing in the practice room, manufacturing this kind of feel with you know, layering time over the top of other time,
right?
You know, different polyrhythms and, you know, odd numbers over other odd numbers, or prime numbers over other prime numbers.
All right.
So like there's these constant points where you can move away from the pulse but still have it there, and then in actual practice there's much more freedom to it, you know, there's much more flow, because you're not necessarily thinking in pulse.
Right,
it's more of I don't know, thinking in the breath almost, you know, it's like this, there's a pulse there, but it's not totally solid. But then sometimes having that solid pulse, you know.
Sure, so I guess you'd be thinking like micro kind of things, like a combination of micro elements. Is that, rather than thinking like a big wide, well, obviously,
but no,
it's
that,
a big wide beat,
big beat kind of thing.
But I suppose you wouldn't be thinking like kind of doing 7/5 strictly, would you?
No. But in the practice room,
totally.
Like a lot of that shit, like loads of it.
Totally.
But having that sort of flow in and out of a direction that you're moving in rhythmically. And then, I don't know, I guess that it gives the ability for interaction to move extremely quickly from one place to another, or from, you know, to maintain a movement in a certain direction, but to be completely open to moving in any other direction at any time, whilst still moving basically in the same, like, propelling in the same sort of way. I don't know. It's hard to
in
the same plane.
Maybe, no, makes sense. Yeah. Because, I love that as, like, an approach as well. Such a thorough thing, because, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the open improvising kind of thing, because that's the thing I kind of miss sometimes. Well, not miss sometimes, but, you know, like, that's the thing I keep thinking of, you know, because we've got, you know, dealing with the history of music, I suppose, especially the last 100 years, like, a lot of things are, like, in a groove, and feel, and kind of bringing that into, you know, free of meter music almost, and how that,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because, yeah, it's such a big thing, isn't it? Kind of, yeah. You kind of hear that a lot, in, especially those, like, free jazz people, you know?
Yeah.
It's not all just random time. It's just, like, actually there's...
I mean, it's like with Rashid Ali and with, like, Andrew Cyril, like, God, it's just... Yeah, this power and this movement and this stream of consciousness, but... you know, still with open ears and, you know, not just floating about.
Yeah.
Which there's times, of course, when that floaty, you know, directionless almost sound is really, really good.
Totally
cool. But yeah, that this sort of multi-directional thing is... it's a good vibe.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, just the openness of, being adaptable to the moment, isn't it?
Mm.
But, I was thinking, so I don't know whether we should tease, like, the solo thing that you've been doing.
Oh, yeah.
Because you sent me, like, the recordings that you've done.
Yeah.
Which sound insane, but I don't know. I don't know if I should mention it, will it be premature?
Well, no, it might give me a kick to actually move forward with them, really. So I started doing this this record. It basically started as a recording practice that I wanted to learn. I mean, on the journey of learning sound, you know, learning to record, record stuff, and so I just bought some mics and interface and went into a practice space and just recorded stuff, like, threw mics around in different places, and, you know, just experimenting what happens when you put mics here, like mono, wide, stereo, all this kind of stuff, as a learning experience for recording. And then I sat down and was listening to them. I was like, oh, there's some decent stuff here. Could be a solo record. But then I was doing other things with recording, like, sound stuff, effects, like bowed cymbals and tambourine playing, you know, for different, in the same way, learning how to record stuff. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool too. And then let's just put it together, maybe with some effects and some post production, and see what happens. And then ended up creating these compositions, almost from these different sessions, and that came together in this record, which I haven't done much with yet, but
But no, but I love that, like, just the pitch material with the cymbals, and just how that's kind of, like,
it's really, like, getting into that as a sort of melodic, a possible melodic source, you know, bowed cymbals and different different symbols and what they give you, and different colors and different note possibilities, was really interesting. A really good learning experience for actually improvising with them as well, you know. So yeah, that was a really fun project. So and that's, I mean, it's pretty much finished. I just need to release it, you know.
Cool, yeah. but like, as we're talking like solo things, that'd be cool to talk about your experiences of playing solo. Because I remember us chatting before, and you were talking about how the advantage of playing solo is like the dynamic range.
Kind of, yeah.
You can get kind of thing. So it's almost like you can play a lot quieter or blisteringly loud.
Yeah.
Without drowning someone out and to create like another timbre.
Yeah, for sure.
Using the drums, which I don't know, I found that really interesting when you said, I remember you saying that to me before, and I was thinking that, that's kind of.
That might have come from, I did a solo gig. I just got a notification thing on Facebook saying it was 3 years ago, you know, when you get the picture up and it's your Facebook memory or whatever, and it was of this gig in that I did in a big church in Rotterdam. Played solo in this massive space with, you know, this beautiful natural reverb, and if it had been anything but solo drums that I was playing, like if I was playing in a group, it would have been the most difficult gig ever, because, you know, you touch the drum and it would drown out everything, or it would take up so much space and just so much, like it would just be chaos. But for a solo, it was amazing, you know, because like you could hit the drum once and it would, you know, fill all this space and it would be this beautiful sound. So in a situation like that, especially, you know, being able to play really quietly and not be sort of lost, and also play really loud without drowning everyone out, is really fun for creating structures and, you know, music and whatever you want to call it. But solos, I'm just getting more into it, you know, the confidence to leave space is the main thing. Is that, for me, that's the main challenge, like to play a solo concert and not just have this constant flow of as many notes as possible to actually leave space and let there be silence, you know. That's the tricky thing for me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I can imagine. Yeah, because I've only done that once or twice. I remember, being petrified that, you know, then kind of listening back a bit and thinking like, oh wow, yeah, maybe this is kind of, you know, too much. Like, possibly, like sitting on a thing for a bit longer is kind of cool as well. And yeah, I know. But brilliant. And then, have you got any plans to do more solo things? Are you?
I've got a solo gig coming up in a couple of months. One of the Loom nights that and Kath Roberts run. I think that one's in July, actually. I just did a solo gig in an art gallery in Ghent a couple of weekends ago, which was different again because I was kind of on the road. I didn't have a drum kit to take or anything, so it was just snare and tambourines and one cymbal. That was a nice challenge. But playing for an hour on just that setup was real. You have to get into stuff in a bit of a deeper way, you know. Really explore one idea for a bit longer.
Man, sounds hardcore. Wow. Yeah. Oh, cool. I'm just trying to think to wrap things up. I don't know if I've missed anything any of the bits coming up for you? Or?
So right now I'm kind of come to the end of a pretty busy period. So, yeah, just the odd little gig around town. Trying to get some, basically get that solo thing, the solo records, on the, you know, moving a bit more, and yeah, that's basically it.
Great, cool. Well, dude, thanks so much.
Cheers, man.
Cheers. Thanks so much for joining this episode, and hopefully we'll see you in the next one. Thanks.
Bye.